Hello and welcome to another episode of Who Knew in the Moment, the podcast. I'm your host, Phil Friedrich, and today I'm honored to have Tony Veland with me. Tony is a two-time NCAA football national champion, a Super Bowl champion, and now his career role is with AIM, and he's the director of member development. And as we get the opportunity to chat today, I think one of the great things you'll hear about Tony's story is his willingness to pivot when doors open up. So Tony, thanks so much for being on today, my man.
No problem. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. So to start your story, not a lot of my guests are actually from Nebraska, so it's fun to talk about a guy that's in the state of Nebraska. You know, grew up in Omaha, and you know, were able to start playing football, played at Benson. But just talk a little bit about getting integrated into football and what brought you to enjoy football.
Well, as a kid, there were a lot of kids in our neighborhood, and if you wanted to, you know, make friends and you know, create bonds and those type of things, you had to be athletic. You had to do some things. We had kids that were out there playing basketball or kickball or football or something along those lines, and I was one of those kids who was actually really, really shy, really, really quiet, but I loved compete. I've always loved to play games. I don't care whether it's sports, whether it's board games, whatever the case may be, I want to win, right? So so that was really kind of my language. If you want to, you know, be able to bond with me, let's compete. Let's do something where one of us can win. And so you know, it was an easy way for me to make friends that way. It was an easy way for me to kind of have confidence in the things that I was doing in a way to you know, kind of grow bonds. And so football was just natural. You know, all my uncles and my father had played football back in the day. Used to love the NFL. I didn't even watch college probably that much back then, but, you know, football was it. And so we'd get out there on the streets and we're playing, you know, kill the man, or we're playing, you know, whatever. And I'm trying to do what I do. So it actually started, you know, at that particular time. And then as I got older, you know, I didn't end up playing organized football until I was in seventh grade, if I'm not mistaken. I played 2 years for a neighborhood league, and then I just caught the bug. You know, it was kind of like, okay, this is me. This is home. I need to be doing something like this. And then from there, I got to high school, and, you know, ended up being one of the better athletes there. And, you know, it was really, you know, I was so glad I ended up playing football, because my first stint into football, especially from a high school perspective, was difficult.
Yeah.
Like, it was really difficult. Our high school team was not very good at all. You know, we were 2-7, 2-7, 3-6 my junior year, and then 5-4 my senior year. You know, we were known as the stat game for everybody else, right? They knew when they played the Benson Bunnies, like, okay, I'm gonna get my stats this week. But I was just one of those guys who was just like, you know, I wanted to compete. You know, I wanted to get rid of that stigma that we had at Benson, and I wasn't gonna settle with being a loser. So, you know, trying to battle through that to change the image and to actually grow our team and to develop our team. Me and, you know, a good friend of mine, Mike Rochek, was a wide receiver. You know, we were doing stuff in the off season, and it paid off, and then people joined us and it paid off more. And then, you know, we ended up, you know, going 5-4, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but honestly, that was the best record we had in almost 15, 20 years at Benson. So it was, you know, it was getting things going in the right direction. And then from there, Nebraska and Denver and all that stuff. And so, but that's kind of where it started, you know, and that's really why I fell in love with it.
So let's start there and dive into what you just shared. And that is, you know, we're going to talk about in the scope of football, but someone listening right now is thinking about this in their business. You know, hey, the business isn't doing what I think it's possible to be doing, but they need to develop their skills, right? Because they're interviewing for the promotion. They're looking for the next leap in their career. And if you just surround yourself and adapt to the environment, that may not get you to where you want to go. So it could have been easy for Tony to say, you know what? I mean, we're just not very good. Like, that's kind of been the way the program's always been. And yeah, I like to compete. I'll still play, right? I'm not going to quit the sport, but I don't want to put in the extra time and effort. But that wasn't you. You were a leader, and you said, not only am I going to put in the time and effort, but I want to bring other people with me. So talk a little bit about that for you in that season of life.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I'm not even really sure, you know, kind of where it come from. You might, you know, my mother and father, you know, they've had to struggle to take care of us, you know, through thick and thin. You know, we didn't always have a lot of money, but when it was all said and done, they found a way to make it work, you know? And so for me, I think that's what kind of rubbed off on me. It was like, we may not grow up in, you know, this, you know, fancy background and, you know, we're in a low income neighborhood, but that doesn't have to mean that I'm going to stay in this particular status, right? I mean, I always had that mindset that I will be able to kind of create my own fate, you know, and determine my own future. And so I knew with going to high school at Vincent, I was going to have to fight some of that, but I was like, you know, we can do something here, you know? And I was lucky enough to find, you know, one guy in particular, like again, my guy, Mike, who had that same mindset. He was just like, listen, I know, you know, Benson stinks right now, but we can make it better. And as long as you have people who are willing to actually put in the extra work, and that's the thing, right? You know, you can't just want it. It's not enough to want it. You actually have to get out there and do the sprints and throw the ball and lift the weights and, you know, go through all that stuff over and over and over again just to see gradual gains, you know? Yes. And I think I think for most people, that's where the drop off happens, right? You know, I come in and I do something different than my regular schedule, and I do that for a month and I don't see the immediate payoff. Well, now I'm discouraged. I don't want to do it anymore, right? Mm-hmm. You can't have that mindset. You got to trust the process. You got to think long term. You know, what do I want to be long term? I may not, all this work I'm putting in, we may not double our wins next year. We may not double it until, you know, 4 years down the line. But as long as I'm moving forward, like that's the key, right? That's the key. So my thing was always just to, you know, kind of lead by example, so to say. I wasn't like a big talker or anything like that. I was just like, listen, we can become better, but I need you to help me. I need us to put in the work and trust the process. And it actually just worked for us. And that's the same thing. In essence, that kind of happens with business, right? You know, you sometimes you have to do something a little bit different, step outside of your bubble, work a little harder than you want to. The other side of that is not doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Finding somebody else who's either, you know, model where you want to be or can give you a little bit of advice, you know, some type of coach, you know, that can help use that game plan and just keep churning and keep churning and keep churning. I mean, I think when it's all said and done, that's how, you know, really successful businesses are built. That's how really successful people end up being successful, because they fail enough falling forward that it's at one point they actually look back and I'm like, hey, I'm a lot farther than I was when I started this thing. And so that's just been my mindset pretty much kind of the whole time. Football started that just with the team dynamic. And that's all. It moved into college when I had to battle a bunch of injuries to kind of do the same thing. And so, you know, there could have been plenty of times where I could have said, you know what, maybe I should just hang this up. You know, maybe this isn't going the way I want it to. Maybe this is God just saying like, hey, you know, maybe you should look at another door. Well, you know, some people can roll with that, but I just wasn't that person. I wasn't ready to give football up. And if you want something bad enough, you'll go through hell and high water to make it happen. And so that was me.
So we're going to dive into that piece in a minute, but let's start with, yes, your transition from Benson. You know, once again, you do have a great personal career there. You know, you perform well, get recruited as a quarterback to go to Nebraska and play there. And, you know, you're heading into I'm sure that's a little bit of a high intensity environment, being the hometown guy going and playing for the hometown team. I mean, a lot of expectations, and people can track you pretty darn easily to see if you're getting the PT that you thought, you know, all those different things. But you go in and you're playing quarterback at that time. And then, to your point, some injuries rack up. So talk a little bit about, you know, getting on college campus, that, you know, change of pace for you, but then also, you know, battling through injuries. Just when you think it's your opportunity, it seems like it gets snatched away.
Right. Well, it was interesting because, you know, at that particular time, there were a number of really good players from Nebraska that I committed. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, the class that I came in with, there was probably four or five guys that I knew really, really well. And other people, probably 10 to 12 of us just from Nebraska in general, who were going to be competing for positions. For me, I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder because I didn't really have like any crazy stats or anything like that. I ended up getting the scholarship because I went to a football camp and I performed really well at the camp. Yeah. And so at the end of the camp, they actually offered me. And at that time, I even though I knew I wanted to play college football, I still hadn't really paid a lot of attention to the college, you know, environment.
Yeah.
So, you know, I knew Nebraska was good, but I didn't necessarily know who were the top teams were, who I should be looking at. I mean, I was getting letters from everywhere, but, you know, I was still trying to figure out where I wanted to go. And initially, I didn't even want to go to Nebraska, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I get the scholarship. Feels great when I'm in there. So I'm like, I'm going to go ahead and make this decision. And then I finally get on campus. And, you know, for me, it was just, it's like game on, right? It's like, okay, I'm here. I don't think anybody expects me to, you know, do anything big. I don't even know in my heart if I feel like I can really be that guy. But here it is, just putting the process in place again, right? So you go to practice, you listen to the coaches, you put in the work and do whatever you can to get yourself in a situation of success, right?
Yeah.
That's you know, kind of where we're headed. And when I came in, I think Mike Grant was the starting quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. Actually Mickey Joseph and Mike Grant were kind of battling it out. So my redshirt year, they took care of that. And my freshman year, you know, then Tommy Frazier comes in,
yeah.
You know? And so now it's like, okay, you know, I've been doing well, you know, I'm doing okay in quarterback there. They're actually looking at me, you know, but yeah. Then Tommy comes in. It's like, you know, he's the heir apparent, you know, he hasn't stepped foot on campus yet, but he's the heir apparent. And that's what everyone was saying. And I think people thought that, you know, some of us were just going to, you know, back down and just allow him to take over. But no, I wanted to compete. I knew that Nebraska was going to have a very competitive environment in nature. And I wanted to see if I could, you know, stand up and come in there and earn a position. And I was actually battling really good. It came down to the last play of the last scrimmage before our first game in my redshirt freshman year. And actually myself and Mike Grant were leading quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I was actually a little bit ahead of him. And then I broke my collarbone. And when I broke my collarbone, you know, it's part of the game, right? It's part of the game. So while I'm hurt and recouping, Tommy Frazier comes in, he kind of solidifies the position. And so the next year, you know, me, Brooke, and Tommy are trying to battle for number one. And Tommy wins it out. So me and Brooke are co-number twos. But that fall, I ended up tearing up my knee.
Yeah.
So that was a really tough one, because throughout that time, there was always been kind of nicks and injuries. I think I had surgery in my shoulder the first summer, you know, I was there. So it was always something. And then when the knee thing happened, I was like, you know, this is a tough one, because, you know, at that particular time, everybody wasn't coming back from their knees, you know, perfect, you know, and you know, some people were actually losing their careers. And so I didn't know what to expect. Went into a big depression for a little bit, was able to get back out because a teacher in Lexington, Nebraska actually wrote to me out of the blue, didn't know me. I didn't know her, you know, I just started getting these random letters of someone trying to give me an encouragement. And I'm just like, what is this? You know, initially I'm like, this is a little odd. What is this? So she writes me a couple of times, and then some of the words that she was saying, it just hit my spirit. You know, it just hit me in the right places, and she said the right words. And in essence, she was just saying that, you know, God is taking you through something, you know, but you've been injured before, you've fought back before. This is the same thing. So, you know, I'm with you. It's just another challenge. Don't lose faith. Don't lose hope. Everybody's praying for you. You're going to be fine. And so many words. And so when she said that, and I finally called her and actually talked to her about everything, she was just like, well, you know, I've been writing players for the last 4 or 5 years. Just to encourage them. Like, I don't know any of them. I just hear your story and I want to encourage them. And she was a teacher there. She gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do this. And so when she said that I was the first person to write her back, I was like, okay, this is meant to be. Like, this is definitely, you know, divine, you know, intervention. You know, God is talking to me through her. And, you know, honestly, it changed the course of my career. Because there was a time during that depression where I thought about, you know, maybe I should be done with football.
So at that point in time, so I want to talk about this, because we're about to make a big shift from offense to defense, but we're still playing football, right?
Right.
And, you know, one thing I'd love to hear you break down for us is deciphering between, is it time to completely, you know, pivot from something, or is it time to make a change and look at a different trajectory of the same industry, right? So, I mean, I think you were just kind of hinting at, part of me thought maybe football's done, right? Maybe it's just time to completely be done with football and, you know, move on to the next thing. Well, it's not for you that football needed to be done. It was you needed to make a pivot and try a different position, right? You know, give yourself a different opportunity. And so I think once again, somebody listening says, Phil, I didn't play college football. I didn't play pro football. But someone might be thinking, you know, I just got to get out of this company. It's not the right company for me. And it might be the right company. You just might be in the wrong position on the bus in the right company, right? And I think, you know, sometimes it's deciphering between those two things. Is it this radical shift that needs to be made, or are there small adjustments that can change the trajectory of where I need to go?
Right. No, that's a great point. Because for me, I think it really came down to what I felt in my heart. You know, I know that injuries were happening, but I still felt like I could play. I wasn't going to take it as, because for me, allowing the situation to dictate my future just didn't sit well with me.
Yeah.
Right. You're going through injuries. That means you shouldn't do this. No, that's not an A plus B equals C, you know, equation for me. Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? So, for me, I was like, and I always took a lot of pride in being a really good athlete. Right. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to be the quarterback. Don't worry. I wanted to be the main guy. But, you know, if something was going to happen, I knew I was also part of a great organization, a great team, a team that that actually cared about us, treated us actually really well, was the team was actually doing really well. And I still felt like I had something to give. And so with that in mind, it was easy for me to say, OK, I don't have to be quarterback because I want to be enough part of this team enough that I'm willing to make this pivot, willing to make a change. To go ahead and still be part of it. You know, if that means that I have to do something that I'm not really used to doing, so be it, because the goal of being the best football player that I can be for that team was still there, right? Mm-hmm. My role has to change, but I can still be a part of the team. And that's something that happens, you know, in business, you know, a lot. You know, there are definitely times where you might feel like, you know, hey, I'm doing pretty well at my job. And then the manager comes up and says, well, hey, we want to make a couple of tweaks here. We'd like you to manage a department or do a different role. I mean, even if it doesn't necessarily feel good at that particular time, I think if you know, take the emotion out of it and think about things long term, you know, is this a company that I want to work for? Is this working towards a goal that I have long term? Do I want to be around good people who are going to support me and empower me and encourage me to keep moving forward, even challenge me to keep moving forward? Then I think it can still be a good decision to stay with that. I think where you really, you know, end up pivoting is if your heart says, listen, now I know I'm putting in this work, but it doesn't feel like I'm not feeling that I really want to, you know, continue to go this path. I really see something else that's kind of pulling on my heartstrings and the passion's not there anymore and that type of thing. I think when you have that happen, then I think it's a lot easier to kind of make those pivots, because if your heart's not pulling it, then, you know, you're just kind of forcing yourself to do something that you don't want to do.
I love it. Now, once again, I don't know the severity of injury in regards to like, hey, maybe that was the right move, but you do make the pivot to defense and you do that as a junior. And I just think there's got to be an amount of letting go of an ego that one must do to be willing to make a pivot and say, hey, if I can still help the team on defense, like I'm willing to do that. Even if I wanted to be the quarterback, right? I've been competing for that role for three years now, right? Like, I still kind of feel like I could do it. But if the team needs me more on defense, or if I could have a bigger impact there, then that's where I'm willing to go. So maybe talk about that and just, you know, ego or, you know that piece of ourselves versus the team.
Yeah, I would definitely say you have to let go of some of your pride. You know, again, being quarterback is a star position. Yeah. Right. You know, when things go right, all eyes are on you. You know, your name is in the bright lights in the newspaper and all those type of things. And, you know, part of me wanted that. So you do got to swallow your pride a little bit to change position. But there's also a part of my ego that says, it's OK, I can change position. I'm still going to be out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and if you have enough belief in yourself and again, you know, in the past, again, when I played at Benson, I played all positions. So I kind of came off the field like three times a game because it was, you know, we didn't have like a lot of players. So, you know, your best players had to play all the time. So it wasn't that much of a change for me to have to play defense because I actually did play in high school. But at the same time, again, I just wanted to prove that I could benefit the team.
Yeah.
I wanted to prove that this team was better off with me out there. And I couldn't do that if I wasn't putting in the work to actually show that. I couldn't do that if I wasn't, you know, listening to the coaches. I couldn't do that if I wasn't going to be the consummate teammate, you know.
Yeah.
And those things actually meant a lot to me because, in essence, that's kind of my leadership style. I want there to be harmony. I want us to push each other when we need to be, but I also want us to set good examples and to lead each other in a place that we all want to go. Right.
Yes.
And so that's kind of been, you know, something that's been, you know, near and dear to me, even from my, you know, Benson days. And even though I'm not over, you know, I wasn't a very vocal person at that particular time, though, that was kind of the attitude that I took with it.
Yeah. So you have an amazing impact on the team, and you guys have a phenomenal last 2 years of college. I mean, you know, once again, arguably the greatest college, you know, dynasty to ever grace college football. And you guys, you got the chance to, you know, show the people down in Florida what was going on here in Nebraska. So talk about, you know, those two seasons. And I think one of the things I'd be interested to just hear your perspective, you know, being on the team is, you know, that concept of iron sharpens iron, right? How when one person is willing to elevate, the whole team has to elevate. Otherwise, you feel like you're the odd man out, right? If everyone else is putting in the work, and I'm not willing to, I'm going to start feeling ostracized pretty quick, which was probably a little bit of a different feel than what you had in Benson, when you maybe felt like, gosh, I really got to pull people with me to get to this level.
No, you're 100% correct. You know, Benson and Essence prepared me to deal with adversity and overcome. But I was actually one of the more vocal and more main leaders trying to pull people in. When I got to Nebraska, there were leaders there. Right. There was leaders there, but there was also a great culture that had already been built. There was a program and a process that was tried and true and proven. So it was easy to kind of get in and somewhat fall in line because, you know, you want to win. Right.
Yeah, right,
you
know, right.
You make some tweaks here and there if you want to win a little bit more. But they were already winning. So we knew kind of what our roles were. But, you know, it was an amazing time. Because we had great consistency with our coaches. We had consistency with our program. We had, we were winning, you know, that always makes things better.
Yes.
So we go in there and, you know, we make a couple of changes, you know, in 92 and 93 with our defense to make it a little bit faster. We get a couple of key players in, obviously, you know, Tommy Frazier, Lawrence Phillips, you know, some of those guys that are big enough players and have such an impact on the game that, you know, kind of put us head and shoulders above everybody else. But it's still really tough to get a team to actually come together and all new people to come from all different walks of land to come together and say, you know what, 11-1 is not enough.
Yeah.
You know, because you're winning the conference championship every year.
Right.
You know, 11-1 is not enough to get 100-some-odd guys to put in the work and to truly have that mindset to say, we're going to do this so we can get to that promised land. Like that was just special in itself. So when we finally got to the Florida State game, we made our improvements. We played them down to the wire. We felt like we obviously won that game. We're not going to say anything about the rest. the ball didn't bounce our way, but at that particular time, it gave us the confidence and the courage to know that what we had been doing was working.
Yeah.
You know, and then that, you know, all the hours of studying and practicing that is paying off, you know, and now it's starting to actually manifest, not just on the field, but actually within, because that confidence is actually growing. Then you go to 94, and 94 was a very interesting year because, you know, we go through all this drama, you know, so to say, is it's like we almost get beat by Wyoming. You
yeah.
know, that particular year. And you got people getting hurt. You got people getting in trouble. You got all this, you know, stuff that happens. But it was great because with everything that was coming in from outside, you know, the media and all these type of things, we were able to band closer and say, listen, don't focus on any of that. Our goal is that way. Stop looking that way. Keep your blinders on and focus on that goal. And we had enough of us leaders to actually pull us together to actually make us focus that way. And 94 really set us up for everything, right? Because, you know, Tommy goes down, you know,
yeah.
Brooke goes down, you know, and it's like, what are we gonna do? You know, we have a quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, because most of the time your team only goes as your quarterback goes, and but we have Terman. You know, he steps up and he does what he's supposed to. The defense steps up and they do what they're supposed to. And you know, we have a couple, you know, really tough games, but when it comes down to it, we make it back down to Miami. And Miami, I don't know if you've ever been to Miami, and just in that environment, that atmosphere. It's crazy. It is crazy. It is crazy to me because they talk. They
Yeah.
are the consummate talkers, right? So that week, even leading up to the game, we went to a professional game and we were walking in, and they happened to be there as well. And people are they're jawing back and forth. The Miami people are jawing back and forth. And it just sets up for this, you know, crazy, crazy game that we have. And then obviously we play the game, we're playing against Ray Lewis and Warren Sapp. And you know,
Yes.
and it's just like, I mean, you couldn't write this story up better, right? I mean,
Right.
we have obviously had a couple good players as well, but you know, we had never played well in the Florida game other than that Florida State one, and they're jawing back and forth, and for it to end the way it did with Warren Sapp, you know, sucking air, you know, hands on his knees,
Yeah.
you know, we're able to hoist up, you know, Coach Osborne. It was literally, and you know, I've had two championships and a Super Bowl championship. It was literally the best feeling I've ever had as a football player. You know, it was unreal.
Yes.
So we have that, and that was amazing. But then that took us to another level. Like,
Yep.
'cause then at that point we knew it was like, we don't have anything to be scared of. We don't have to be scared of speed. We don't have to be scared of Florida. We can ground and pound anybody out there. Like, it took us to a different level in 95. 95, we were almost, to be completely honest, we were almost arrogant. I mean, we were just at that level. We were like, okay, we're deep. You know, we have good leaders. You know, most of us are staying out of trouble. Like, the only way we're gonna lose this championship is if we beat ourselves. That's just kind of how we felt, you know. And you know, and when you look at the games, that's really what it came down to. I mean, I think we only had two games where people were within 14 points of us, right? And I think everybody was just so focused and so, you know, just like, there's no way we're not going to get this back-to-back championship. So it was just such a different level, because in 94 we were still like, we think we're there, we're not 100% there, we got to go over a couple of hills to get to this goal. But you know, 95, I'm not going to say it was down, it wasn't downhill. We actually had some tough teams that we had to go through, but our mindset was so strong that it would have been very, very hard to beat us that year.
Now, something I'm always curious about is, if you do something once, people, they can call it luck, they can call it, it's a down year, whatever it is. But when you start doing it consistently, it's like, well, no, that's just who you are. The tough part, though, is I think sometimes either how do coaches motivate you to show up, because you still like, hey, you win the national championship. Well, now you got an even bigger bullseye on your back, right? Like before, you were a good team, but now it's like literally every team that plays you is going to give you everything they got because it could be their national championship, right? They don't maybe have the opportunity to go undefeated this year. So the fact that they get to play you, if they could beat you, that's it. So what are things that, you guys would internally inside the team or as a coaching staff do to motivate you and continue to make sure every day you showed up hungry, not like, hey, we won it last year, we'll be good again this year.
You know what? I don't think it's anything any different than any other team out there who's been in that situation. You know, obviously, number one, just focusing on one game at a time, not looking past anybody, regardless of, you know, kind of where their stature is. Because again, we, like, Wyoming wasn't rated. Wyoming was a, to be honest, they were a terrible team in 94. And they still almost beat us because, you know, we kind of overlooked them. So we understood what that was all about. The other thing was, we didn't want to be kind of like a one-trick pony. We didn't want this people to say that this was a fluke. You know, we wanted people to understand that Nebraska was real, that this is for real, that even though we've been at the top, we're at the top now, we plan to stay there. And we knew that if we didn't continue doing the same things that we were doing before, as far as the work, as far as the study, as far as listening to the coaches, as far as staying, you know, sound off the field, that was going to derail our chances to actually stay up top. So I think the other thing that we, you know, we did, some of us, you know, within our groups, you know, you had DB groups and D-line groups and that type of thing. You know, we had our competitions, you know, who could, you know, get more tackles, who could, you know, vie for you know, some type of award at the end of the season. And,
yeah,
and you know, those times of things are great because when it's all said and done, like, you don't get those awards unless you're playing well.
Yep.
You know, and so you have to do the things that it takes to do that. And so we didn't, I don't think we did anything that was out of the ordinary other than we just had, you know, a serious mindset. We took ownership of the team ourselves as opposed to just the coaches,
yeah,
you know, leading us. I think that was really, really key for us, because when you take ownership of something, it's yours. You take care of it a little bit better if it's yours, right?
Yes.
You know, and so we kind of had that mindset and we took pride in that. And I think in that moment, you know, I think we thought we were decent. But I mean, looking back, you know, obviously 25 years, and I don't think any of us thought that we were that level.
Yeah.
Right. That was just unheard of. And I was there at a blessed time, and then just, you know, some great, great players and great coaches, and it all worked out.
Well, so because you're not going to say it, I'm going to say it for you. And I think I want to highlight it because I think anyone that's played sports knows how big of a honor and compliment it is. But your senior year, you were a team captain. And,
yeah,
you know, that's one of those things. I don't know, you know, how Nebraska did it, if it was team voted or if it was coach appointed. But it either was. Which way, it's a tribute to, one, your level of skill, right, and your role on the team.
Yeah.
But two, it's the way that people within the organization view you, right? Like, hey, we're willing to have you be someone that we're designating as a leader of the team. So, you know, sure. Talk a little bit about being a captain, you know, on a team that is full of just amazing football players, right? And how you can take everyone and make sure that they are keeping the blinders on, right? How do we make sure we're staying focused and not allowing my desire to be the Outland Trophy winner or the Heisman Trophy winner,
right,
you know, get above what we do as a team?
Right. So it was something that was voted on by the team, which I appreciate that more than anything else, because obviously it means that your peers respect you, and they hold you in high esteem. And so was very happy to have had that honor bestowed upon me. But it was a tough job. I'm gonna be honest with you. It was a tough job because we had a couple of wayward people. You know, we had a couple of knuckleheads. You know, we had some of those guys. And so, you know, as a leader, in essence, even though I wasn't like extremely vocal, I was one of those people where when I said something, you know, people listen, right?
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I'm not talking crazy. I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm always trying to help people. And so, you know, our thing was to, again, to be able to police our own.
Yeah.
Right. So we've had stuff in the past, and we actually had an organization called the Unity Council. I don't know if you heard of that before, but, you know, Coach Osborne put together the Unity Council, and this was basically our own representatives to police people who actually were stepping outside of our regulations and our boundaries. Right. They come in front of us, and, you know, we'd actually, you know, give them punishment and those type of things, because in essence, we wanted to show, like, if this is serious, like, if you seriously want to be a football player, you seriously want to be successful, then do the things that it's going to take for us to be successful, right?
Love
you
it.
Know, don't just be accountable to coaches, be accountable to us. You know,
yeah,
that's what makes this thing go. So that obviously helped, you know, quite a bit. But then you'd obviously get a couple of people who still, you know, went outside the boundaries and this and that. But that's why you have, you know, a number of captains, because everybody has their type of communication style, right?
Yep.
You know, I'm more of a laid back person. I'm not like an in-your-face person, unless it's like in the heat of the moment type thing. I mean, I try to rationalize people. You have, you know, other people's, like, you know, Christian Peter, who was a captain as well. He might ram it on your throat. You know, he's going to tell you, hey, get your stuff together, right?
Yeah.
You know, those types of things. But, you know, the fact that we are respecting everybody that's on the team, we don't treat anybody different, we're putting in the work, we're not, you know, being hypocritical with anything that we're doing, you know, people can respect that, and also shows them, listen, you know, this is our team. There's an order to our team. And if you don't want to be part of the order, that's fine.
Yeah.
The door's that way, right?
Yeah.
You know, the door's that way. And so we had to have that in order for us to be successful, because we did have some strong personalities. You know, we had some really strong personalities. And even though back then we didn't have, you know, social media and all that stuff, there were still distractions, right? There were still distractions, and you still had to be able to pull people in and try to make them, you know, stay pretty much focused on that goal. And it was easier to do that because we had strong leaders. And we also had a coaching staff that supported us big time.
Well, and I love that you highlight that, because I think that's such an important part. I mean, any organization, any, you know, whatever it is, that is successful typically has strong personalities, right? Yeah. And it's a matter of, can you make everyone work in a manner for the number one good of everyone, opposed to the best for that one person or for, you know, one individual within the organization.
Exactly. And that's why I say, that's why I really say that it is such a great thing that we were able to come together, have a meeting of the minds, and say to everybody, to a person, well, that's to most of us, to a person, that goal was number one.
Yeah.
Like getting the championship was number one. You know, it wasn't about, you know, winning a Heisman or, you know, some of those other awards. Like, we wanted to do that personally, don't get me wrong, but we wanted to do that within the confines of our game plan, and we wanted to do anything that was going to sacrifice the success of our team. And so that's, in essence, how we rolled for those last 2 years.
I love it. So you have success in this new defensive role, and because of that, we finish up our college career, and the Denver Broncos come calling in the sixth round and say, hey, Tony, we think you'd be a nice fit for our team. So talk a little bit about just the one excitement that comes with that, but then two, the realization like, oh crap, I kind of am like the bottom man on the totem pole again, and it's time to, you know, get going.
It was a crazy transition. It was unreal, number one, because when I went to college, you know, I went as a quarterback. So even though I loved NFL as a kid, I went to college as a quarterback, and I was an option quarterback. So I didn't have any, you know, thoughts that I would ever, you know, be looked at NFL. And I was like, I'll have an okay college career and that'll be it. But then when I switched to defense, you know, after that junior year, I started to get a couple of letters from people, and I ended up getting an invite from the Hula Bowl, which is an all-star game for seniors. And then in my mind, I thought, I might have a chance here. Like, I don't know for sure, but I might have a chance. But, you know, I wasn't going to change anything I was doing, just, you know, keep working hard and trying to produce. And, you know, I connect with the agent, you know, we talk a little bit, and, you know, I go to the combine and I do decently well. And so I didn't know I was going to get drafted, but it ended up happening. And it was kind of one of those bittersweet moments, because when you want something really bad, you can be gullible about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I had people telling me, you know, man, you're probably going to go in the second round or third round and this and that. So, you know, back then the draft was 2 days. And so the first three rounds, the first day, the second three were the last day. And so the draft day happens and I don't go on that first day. And I'm like, okay, it's not that big of a deal. You know, like, I understand, you know. So I go to the next day. And fourth round goes by, and fifth round goes by, and then the sixth finally comes. And when I did get chosen, it was funny because my agent called me, and he's like, you know, hey, you know, how you doing? Congratulations on so-and-so. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm still sitting here waiting. Because what happened is I actually got chosen on a commercial. So I didn't get a chance to actually see my name go across. And so when he finally tells me that, I'm like, you know, brother, you know, sigh of relief, you know, wipe the brow. And I'm like, okay, you know, this is going to happen. I can't believe that it's happening, but it's happening. And then when I get to Denver, honestly, it's kind of like the same thing as Nebraska.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, now I'm really with the best of the best. Mm-hmm. Prove yourself.
Yeah.
Prove yourself. Like, you've got to go in there and you've got to go 100 miles an hour. You've got to know the playbook like no other. You've got to be coachable. You know, you've got to do whatever you can to get yourself at that level where the coaches kind of believe in you. And so, and that one was tougher, right? Yeah. That one was tougher because, you know, there's only so much talent in the state. So if you get that talent that goes to a university, you know, if you're a decent athlete, you can still, you know, kind of shine. And the pros, most of the time, it's not going to be that too many athletes are head and shoulders above everybody else. It's that they make a lot less mistakes. Mm. They know the playbook so much more. They can deal with the insecurity of you know, being fired the next day, possibly in your career, you know, being done with, you know, those, and they can deal with the competition. And those were the things that were really, really hard to deal with on a professional level, because I, you know, again, I was happy to be there.
Yeah.
I was very happy to be there, but I was also one of those people who, you know, sometimes focus on mistakes too much.
Yeah.
You know, so if you make a mistake, like, I can't make a mistake again. You, and when you have that attitude, unfortunately, you bring about more mistakes, you know, instead of focusing on, like, I'm about to make this play and those type of things. So that was the tough part about being in Denver, but being able to go there and literally play with guys that I haven't watched when I was a kid. I was watching Elway, and I wasn't like a big Denver fan, but how can you not know about Elway? You know, he was the man, right? You know, I'm going and watching these guys, and I'm playing with Shannon Sharpe, and I'm playing with Terrell Davis and Rod Smith and all these guys who eventually, you know, would end up, you know, being in the Hall of Fame, that type of thing. I didn't know it at the time, but it was just so surreal.
Yeah.
Because I'm still in my mind thinking, okay, should I be here? should I really be? Do I have the talent, you know, to be here? But again, the same things I did in the past, just put in the work, you know, was coachable, you know, watched a lot of film, that type of thing. And at some point, you know, I did get a chance to, you know, somewhat battle. I wasn't battling for first, but I was battling to get position. You know, Steve Atwater was the free safety at that time. Steve's a Hall of Famer. Steve wasn't about to get beat out. So so I was just trying to get some time. So got a chance to get in on special teams and that type of thing. I actually was in the practice squad my first year, but then my second year, everything, you know, worked out. And somehow, some way, man, we ended up in a Super Bowl. We ended up in a Super Bowl. You know, four championships in 3 years. And I couldn't have written a better story. Right. Like I literally could not have written a better story. I mean, to actually come from where I am, to make it there at a team that I never really paid any attention to. Well, I wasn't planning on playing defense when I was a kid. You know, it's just funny how, you know, life goes. You know, you go around the corner, over the hill, down the valley, up in the mountain, all this type of thing just to get to a certain destination. And, you know, it was a hell of a ride. When I got there, I couldn't have been happier. I mean, it was a great experience.
Now, a question I have, and, you know, people talk about this frequently, is if you don't have confidence in yourself to the level you need to, can you borrow it from someone else for a period of time until you can get, you know, the confidence you need? And the thing that I think is interesting is you can be confident in certain things and not in others. You can be confident at certain phases of your life and not at other phases. It's not as if once you're confident, you are universally confident for the rest of your life, regardless of the scenario. And I sit here and I think, man, how the heck am I supposed to be confident when Tony won, you know, national championships, gets drafted, you know, goes to this team, and he's having some doubt. It also is reassuring to me, though, that, man, somebody that has had as much career success as he has had, still every once in a while, can recognize that, hey, I'm having a limiting belief and I need to overcome that. So, you know, for you, as you were entering into the NFL, what did that look like for you? Was that something, hey, there were people on the team that instantly took me under the wing? Was that, you know, ex players you had played with that were, you know, encouraging, motivating coaches? You know, talk a little bit about where that confidence came from and how you built that to, you know, get to stay in the NFL level.
Well, you know, it was difficult, but at the same time, I was very lucky to have gone to Denver because it was a locker room that was welcoming, you know, and that was not always the case at every other locker room at that particular time. I have friends that I know that went to locker rooms where, you know, the people that were in their same position room didn't want to talk to them because they knew they were vying for their same spot, right? And that wasn't really the case with me. You know, Steve Atwater, Tyrone Braxton, like they were the top safeties at that time, and they were extremely welcoming. Answered any questions that I had, always was very helpful. I had an agent, Craig Doman, who was real. He was a realist. You know, he wanted to, you know, encourage me as much as he could, but he also, you know, kind of kept me grounded and was like, listen, these are the things you need to do in order to be successful. And, you know, looking back on it, you know, one thing that I probably would have done more at that particular time is just focus more on the successes as opposed to focus on the failures. And that, I think that's the problem. Like, you can be confident in certain things. Like when I played quarterback, I was very, very confident in running. You know, you let me run the ball, I'm going to make some things happen. I got to throw the ball, might be sweating a little bit, you know? So you do things that'll give you those small victories that'll grow into the big victories. Right. And so that's the thing that I wish I would have focused on a little bit more in the NFL, as opposed to other parts of my career. But at the same time, if you've got people around you who are encouraging, that's going to help a lot. The other part of that, again, in believing yourself, is not just focusing on the good things, but also telling yourself good things. Mm-hmm. Because if you're focusing on the bad plays, you're always questioning yourself, right? And a lot of times that questioning yourself can lead into other areas of your life. If you don't turn that off and just say, listen, you know, I was able to make it here. You know, I'm here for a reason. You know, there's a million other players out there that wasn't able to get here. So stop focusing on why, you know, you shouldn't be in here. Focus on why you should be, you know. And so I think when you have that mindset and you do the things to kind of bolster that and put yourself around people who will help you, encourage you with that, then I think good things can happen. Otherwise, you know, this world can be a mean place, and social media can be a mean place. Like, you got to try to drown that out. And be your best cheerleader. You've got to be your number one cheerleader, you know, when it's all said and done, because that's where that confidence comes from.
You bet. So if we had two more hours, I'd keep going down this path, but I know we don't have that.
No,
much
we can
time.
Change it.
So,
yeah.
so on the topic of football, right? So, I mean, this has been a prevalent part of your life for a very long time. And oftentimes something that can happen from that is our identity can get wrapped up in what has gotten us attention, what has gotten us notoriety, what has gotten us to where we're at. And then all of a sudden, as we pivot out of the NFL, you see, a lot of different things. You see people kind of trying to figure out, who am I? What am I going to do next? So talk about that pivot for you out of the football world into the next phase of life for Tony.
I will say that pivot was, obviously, number one, it was forced, because I didn't want to leave the NFL. You know, I was only there for 3 years. So it was a heck of a roller coaster. You know, I'm up in the Super Bowl and then I get released and go to Carolina and we don't have a very good year. But, you know, then I'm out after that third year. And then it was time to come back and get a regular job. Right. And even though I had a degree, I still didn't feel like I had like really good skills. My communication was not very strong. So I ended up struggling, you know, with the transition. I ended up going into financial planning because I saw some things that had happened when I was in the league with players that, you know, mismanaged their monies. And I felt like maybe if I can help, you know, general people manage their monies, it would be a great service for them. And so I went into that realm. Yeah. But another reason I picked that was because I knew it would force me to learn how to talk, force me to increase my communication. And I knew that regardless of what I was going to do in the future, if I wasn't going to be able to talk and communicate, it was going to be really hard for me to be successful. You know? And so I made that transition, but it was tough. You know, it was very tough because, you know, again, here I am still feeling like, you know, I really want to be doing this. No, I want to be playing football, you know, that's where my identity is. And I can probably get into some, you know, rooms that other people can't because of the notoriety of being a football player, but am I confident enough and do I know my stuff well enough to go in there and you know, provide value and not just be kind of this figurehead or face type situation? I struggled with that for a long, long time. It took me years, honestly, to get over that. And it was just kind of my own thing. Right. But it's just like, unfortunately, playing football, you get better when you practice. Yep. Right. So you get better with the act. And the more appointments you have, the more conversation you have, the easier it becomes. You know, the more you study and the more you learn about whether your service or your product, the more comfortable you are with it. And it starts to become natural. And so after a while, I got the hang of it and I made it work. But I will say it was difficult for, and I had people around me who are, you know, trying to help and trying to guide. But sometimes you can have that inner fight with your head and it's just like, dude, just put in the work, put in the work, keep doing the reps, you will get better, you know? Yeah. And that's exactly, in essence, kind of what it is. I'm sure there's people out here like, can you stop doing football analogies? I can't help it. That's in me. but that's pretty much what it is. I mean, you can only overcome something by doing the work and actually doing it to get better. And so I was very happy that I did that, going in that field, because I was, you know, at a position where I was, you know, helping a lot of people who need that help. But even more, just being able to, you know, kind of not necessarily leave that identity of the football player behind, because that's always going to be a big part of me. But knowing I could take a lot of the things that I learned from that, those same practices, that same, you know, mindset, and apply it towards other things and still be relatively successful.
Yeah. Well, and one thing that I think we're consistently hearing in your story, and I think it's a good application, is to become upper echelon of almost anything in life. It's not about doing the things that you want to do when you want to do them. Sometimes it's about doing the unfun things when you don't want to do them, because that's what it requires to reach that pinnacle that you want to get to.
Oh, it really is. It really is. You know, I recently read, I don't remember what the book is called. It was about David Goggins, the SEAL guy.
Yeah.
And all the crazy workout stuff that he does.
Yeah.
And I am not doing any of that. I'm going to tell you off the bat. But I do understand the mindset, right? It's, you know, train your body to do the things that your mind doesn't want to do, right? You know, or train your mind, I should say. Yeah. Because there's a lot of times where, you know, we want to run our business or we want to do whatever job is that we do. And we think about the glitz and glam, you know, making decent money or, you know, higher profile position or, you know, being liked by people. But, you know, it's the grind work. It's the grunt work that allows you to get there, right? It's the stuff, it's the freaking calls you got to make and the no's you got to take and, you know, the consistently, you know, doing those type of things to become better. And that's how it is in every position out there. You know, and so, you know, again, I learned the process when I was a kid, and it's, you know, it morphs a little bit because of different industries, but at the basics, it's all the same.
Yes. So as you're going through that realm, the financial planning world, once again, have success, you're helping people, but you just feel like there's something different. There's something more that could be going on. And eventually you get to AIM, and this is where your and I's relationship begins, right? We get to connect, but talk a little bit about what led you to that pivot and why you felt like, hey, this is an opportunity that I want to go, you know, take a look at and see if it's a good fit for me as a career.
Well, I was I just made a move in my career to another financial institution, and the guy that gave me my first job out of college, he found out about an opportunity. His boss was actually on the board of AIM and found out about an opportunity to run their sales team. And you know, I wasn't looking to leave, but I think he knew that I was somebody who has always been, you know, somehow involved in nonprofit, you know, with, especially things with the youth.
Yeah.
And when I found out that, you know, AIM was providing opportunities for, you know, kids who look like me, came up from, you know, areas that I grew up in, which is lower income, provided opportunities for us to get into an industry that is stable and is growing, needs more diversity. People can make pretty good money, and it will allow them to pick an industry that could change their trajectory, right?
Yeah.
You know, something that's really stable. These jobs aren't going anywhere. As a matter of fact, those jobs are multiplying, right?
Yeah.
When I found out about that, I was like, okay, I'm not necessarily a tech guy, but I do want to be somebody who can provide opportunities for kids. Like the youth has always been a passion of mine, you know?
Yeah.
I can talk to them till I'm blue in the face about sports, but very, 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 very few kids that I have ever, you know, coached or trained or had, you know, any contact with will ever have a chance to go play professionally, right? Mm-hmm. So that platform from that perspective is just, it's not all encompassing, right?
Yeah.
But I wanted to be able to provide something where kids can say, you know, hey, you know, I know you got a video game, I know you got a cell phone, or you got social media, whatever the case may be, you know, these apps, you know, stop just being a consumer. Why don't you build one?
Yeah.
You know, why don't you think about, you know, being an engineer? Why don't you think about creating your own website? You know, all these types of things where kids can actually stay in tech, still do things that are fun, but actually make money at it, right?
Yeah.
And make money at it. And so I wanted to be able to promote that, and AIM allows me to do that. And so I've been with them for the last 6 years, in essence, you know, as the director of member development. And I'm going out and I'm talking to companies about, you know, how are they finding the talent?
Yeah.
Right? How are they actually diversifying their, you know, their workforce? You know, what are they doing to build a stronger pipeline? And what are they doing to, you know, provide opportunities for kids who just don't have them? You know, so I talk about the programs that AIM is offering. I talk about ways that we can get people who are in the workforce right now into the tech workforce and not necessarily have to go to school for 4 years and do the 4-year degree. There's other ways that we can do that. And we actually, you know, fund that. You know, for me, it just kind of made sense. And don't get me wrong, I still love the financial industry at that time. But at that time, I felt like I was helping people who had already had assets, you know, and I felt like I could make a move to you know, some individuals who actually need a little bit more impact. And it was, plus it was a little more close to home. And so I ended up making that move, and it's been a great move. It's been a great move. I never thought I would probably actually work in nonprofit. You know, I sit on boards, but I never thought I would work in that. But I've learned, you know, quite a bit. I've made, you know, some really, really great relationships, and I've been able to use my platform to help people who, you know, are just like me. So I'm just hoping to create a couple more success stories.
Now, you know, you mentioned that, and I want to highlight those last two pieces that you mentioned. That is using your platform, and then, you know, people that look like me, right? That's a big thing that you hear frequently is people might have doubts if they've never seen someone that's their gender, their skin color, right, do something. It's like, well, could I really do it, right? There's always the outlier, right, that has had success, right. But maybe for the majority, they don't see that. And I think one of the amazing things for you is, that's something you're passionate about. But two, your platform, although it has nothing to do with technology, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in the grand scope, the things that you've been able to accomplish probably get the attention, right, of certain people that otherwise you may not be able to reach. If, you know, Tony was a computer programmer for Meta, it's like, all right, cool, man. But like, you know, that's not all that intriguing to me. But because of your platform and crossing over into a different industry, you're able to, you know, connect on a different level. So talk about that, you know, connecting with folks, having someone be able to see in you something that maybe they didn't believe was possible beforehand.
Yeah, you know, it's just always been great for me. Obviously, I never thought I would accomplish what I did in football. I never thought that this platform would be as big. I knew even with, you know, me being a Nebraska guy, you know, that, it, you know, my name probably carries a little more weight just because it's Nebraska. You know, Nebraska is our professional football team here, right? Yep. You know, so, but, you know, even back in school, you know, Coach Osborne had realized, you know, the impact and the influence that we have over people, you know, not just kids, over people in general. And he actually used that to start the teammates, you know, mentoring program, which I'm a part of right now. And so, you know, that just always stuck with me, right? You know, use your platform for good. Don't use it just to, you know, make money for yourself. Don't use it just to, you know, be a loud mouth. Use it for good, you know? And that's, you know, in essence what I wanted to do. And I focus again on helping people. Now, you know, AIM is trying to get more diversity in this space. And obviously I'm a huge advocate for that. But I also want this to kind of go both ways. I want, you know, people who may not be in diverse populations to see that, you know, you don't have to look like somebody to have a great impact on them. Mm. Right. You don't have to look like somebody else to influence them in the right way and to give a helping hand, those type of things. Like I always wanted to be that person that, you know, if a kid walks up to me, whether he's white or black, you know, when he leaves me, he's going to be like, hey, he's a cool guy. He's a good guy. He helped, you know, and for me, that's kind of what that's about. So I want to show, you know, those executives out there, like, hey, there's people out there that can use your help. You know, you guys have been blessed with, you know, either great form, you know, fortune or resources or knowledge, whatever the case may be. There's kids out there that can benefit from that. Right. Yeah. And they might not necessarily look like you, but you can provide hope for them, especially in a time when we're coming from COVID, where we had the, you know, kids had to deal with all that craziness, you know. Yep. So to show kids out there that there are people out there who care, mm-hmm. and they don't have to be in your family, you know, they don't have to look like you, you know, so that's huge. And then on the other side of that is to show kids like number one, if you want to be something, there are people who will help you do it.
Yeah.
You know? And they don't have to look like you. They don't have to look like you. They will help you do it, you know. So if there's somebody out there who wants to give you a helping hand and he doesn't look like you, maybe you're white and he's not white, don't slap that hand away, you know. Be embracing, you know, because in my opinion, we were all put here to take care of each other.
Yep.
Right. All we have all the resources. If we just stop being selfish sometime, we have all the resources to take care of each one of us down here. And so that's an this is the attitude that I've kind of taken. That's why I use my platform for. It's not just to, you know, talk about, hey, look at my jersey. I was in Super Bowl. You know, that's cool. But most people know, you know, I'm humble because I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about, you know, how can we do more for other people? And I'm going to use that platform to allow that to happen.
And there's no doubt as I hear that, I just think back to the teacher in Lexington writing you that letter. Yeah. And thinking you're doing that for someone else in 20 years from now, 30 years from now, some kid's gonna be like, there was this guy, Tony. I don't know why, right? But like, he is the reason that I am here. So, Tony, I want to say thank you to you for sharing your story and just all the amazing things you're doing, and excited to just continue to watch your journey, and can't wait to, you know, record this again in 5 years when you've got amazing stories of all the things you've continued to do.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for the platform. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing.